This week's episode is made possible by our friends at Independent Bank. You can learn more about them at i-bankonline.com. Good morning, Memphis. Today we're exploring a topic we've discussed frequently, mental health. However, today we get to learn more about how it impacts early childhood and those caring for children. First Aid Memphis conducted a landscape survey to glean data directly from those in our community, and some of the findings may surprise you. Here to help explain the data are Dr. Candace Thomas, Executive Director of First Aid Memphis, and Kimberly Carter, the Owner-Director of Brilliant Minds Child Development Center. A little bit of background before we dive in. Shelby County's Early Childhood Education Plan was established in 2015 by a diverse steering committee of public and private stakeholders. As a direct result, First Aid Memphis was founded in 2019 to implement key strategies of this plan.
The plan included a wide range of strategies that our guest, Dr. Candace Thomas, is going to share with us a little bit later in the conversation. Dr. Thomas is a change maker and leader in children's social, emotional development and well-being through diversity-informed practice and mindfulness. Prior to joining First Aid Memphis, Dr. Thomas was a senior program manager at the Irving Harris Foundation. She provided vision and strategic direction for organizations integrating early childhood development and child trauma-informed best practices in order to help improve school and life outcomes for children from birth to age 8. Dr. Thomas led the creation and current dissemination of the diversity-informed tenets for work with infants, children, and families. She is currently the chair of the Tenants Advisory Council. Dr. Thomas is also a founder of Camp Sojourner, Girls Leadership Camp, an organization that promotes leadership development, creative arts, and appreciation for nature for Philadelphia girls. Dr. Thomas has a PhD in child development from Erickson Institute, Loyola University of Chicago, a Master's of Public Policy degree from the University of Chicago Harris School of Public Policy, and a BA from Wesleyan University.
Kimberly Carter is a native Memphian who brings a wealth of knowledge in all things child care and human services. Before she became the owner-director of Brilliant Minds Child Development Center, she served the state of Tennessee in the Departments of Children's Services and Child and Adult Care Licensing, retiring after 30 years of service. Let's welcome Kimberly and Candace to the studio. Good morning, Dr. Thomas and Mrs. Carter. How are y'all this morning?
Great.
Good. How are you?
Okay.
Really good. Excited for a new month? April yes. Showers?
Yes.
Spring May flowers, right?
That's right.
Did everybody survive April Fools?
Was no fools, all fun.
I love it. Glad to hear it. We're so excited to have both of you with us today to discuss this very, very important topic, mental health and specifically how it impacts early childhood and those caring for children. But before we kind of dive into that, I would love to kind of get a little background on each of you. So Dr. Candace Thomas, will you share a little bit about yourself and about First Aid Memphis?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited. As you said, I am Dr. Candace Thomas. This week will be my fourth year living in Memphis.
Welcome.
Yay. So I moved here April 2020, the beginning of the pandemic.
And wow.
Yes, literally April 7th, 2020. And our organization worked remotely for 18 months. We only saw each other like two or three times in that first 18 months. And so while I've been here for 4 years, sometimes it feels like 2 years because we lost 2 years in some ways from the pandemic. But so honored to be here and really honored to work at First Aid Memphis. So First Aid Memphis is what we call an early childhood systems building organization. And we're a place-based organization. So we focus on Memphis and Shelby County. And there are early childhood systems building organizations across the country. And what makes this organization so unique is that many of those orgs are statewide. So states have system building organizations. And Memphis and Shelby County decided we need to have our very own systems building organization to align all of those who are working with or on behalf of young children and their families up to age 8. So hence First Aid Memphis, the first 8 years of life. And it's been an amazing journey. And here we are 4 years later.
So you mentioned the first eight as an intentional name. Why are those first 8 years so critical?
Oh, my goodness.
That's a big question.
That's a big question. You know, the first 8 years really determine so many things about our life in the future. So first of all, as our audience and everyone may know, most of our brain growth and development happens in the first 5 years of life. So all of our experiences from prenatal until five impact how our brain grows, literally how those synapses meet and work together so that we become more and more, we can use our language better, we can use our motor skills, we can regulate our emotions, and all of that happens before a child turns five. And then at eight, there's a ton of research that shows that by 8 years old, kind of good or bad, we have a general sense of how somebody's life is. So if by eight, if you're reading generally at grade level, you've been able to be successful in school up until third grade. So you've been able to attend school regularly. You have you've been able to connect with your teachers and learn from them. You may be reading at grade level. That sort of tells us that you're going to graduate from high school, that you may have some other post-secondary experience, that you may be able to hold down a good job. So the 8 year mark tells us a lot about what we're going to be like as adults.
So interesting. So in that vein, I would like to kick it over to you, Kim. I would love to hear a little bit about you and about Brilliant Minds Child Development Center.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Kim Carter. I am the proud owner of Brilliant Minds Child Development Center. I also started during the pandemic.
Wow. Wow, twinsies.
Oh my goodness. July of 2020, and people thought I was crazy.
I can't.
Driven.
Yes.
Well, I retired from the state of Tennessee after working there for 30 years, and I was going to go home and do nothing.
As you will have earned. Yeah, you had earned that right. Yeah.
Having worked in childcare, it's in me. And I saw an opportunity to help families. I'm in the Berkeley area, mm-hmm. which is the really diverse area, mostly with the Hispanic population. But here lately, I have a melting pot of everything. I have every nationality and race, literally, inside them. So it's been a learning experience for me. I've enjoyed the being able to help people that or families or individuals that were underserved, mm-hmm. and having been on the other side and now being on this side, I feel like I'm equipped to find information and to help them by saying, you know, I know this, or, you know, I owe you, I know where to go get these resources. Yeah. So that's who I am.
I love it. So what is the relationship between Brilliant Minds Child Development Center and First Aid? Can you kind of help us connect those dots?
Yes. I work with First Aid through Next Memphis as a secondary through Next Memphis. We partner with them. They partner with 36 agencies.
Okay.
And they help us, as I said, to provide services throughout the community. Through this partnership, which is great, we're able to reach more families, but we also have research-based information to work with.
Oh, that's handy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kim, we had connected off mic in a previous conversation, and you mentioned how big of a role data plays in the work that you do every day. Can you talk to us a little bit about why there's a data-based approach to early childhood child care?
The database approach with child care, it allows us to see, you know, like she said, the first 5 years is where the children, that's when you kind of determine that where their brain is developing. Mm-hmm. And the data helps us determine, you know, where the families are, help us connect the dots. If some child is lacking in some area, we know exactly where to go. And it gives us numbers and facts to work with these families. And Next Memphis and First Aid helps us with this data. So we collect it, we press it onto them, they develop it, and then we know where we need to focus.
And where those interventions need to kind of come in. Okay. I bet it also helps make you a more reliable advocate for these families and children as well.
Absolutely.
As a parent myself of a 5-year-old, which now I'm like rerunning the last 5 years. I'm like, have I done all I can do? What do I need to do by
no
8?
Worries.
Here we go.
So related to that, data is a big part of the work with First 8, and you recently conducted a landscape assessment. Can you talk to us a little bit about what that is and how it came to be?
Yes, yes. And Kim was a part of our landscape assessment. Well, you are part of the assessment. You provided some data to the assessment, and you were part of our sense-making session.
Ooh.
So we got all the data, and then we brought together a group of like 20 people to help us make sense of the data, because we shouldn't have been the only ones interpreting it. So we had a sense-making session, and Kim was a part of that.
I like that name, a sense-making. Yeah, let's make sense of it, because as we all know, especially as a nonprofit, Rebecca, we were like, data means nothing on its own. You have to be able to decipher it and then build actionable steps from there.
Yeah, I'm always like, what story is it telling us?
Yes.
Yeah.
So how is the landscape assessment?
Yeah, so we, it's such an honor. We were able to conduct what we call an infant and early childhood mental health landscape assessment. And the landscape assessment was to really understand how are young children doing in Memphis and Shelby County? Children prenatal to the age of 8, so we also talk to people who are pregnant. And generally, we want to know what are the factors that shape children's development, children's relationship with whoever cares for them every day, and what is it like to be a professional who work with young children from prenatal to 8? So we, our landscape assessment took us about a year and a few months to conduct. We did it with a part of an advisory council. And as you know, when you do things collaboratively, it takes longer than when you may do it on your own. But the collaboration is so important. And so we have a ton of data. We surveyed, we did focus groups, and we conducted individual interviews with both parents whose children were under the age of 8. And any professionals or providers who work with them.
So interesting. What prompted the survey or assessment? What was like the, hey, we need this and we need it now?
Yes. Well, Memphis and Shelby County has an early childhood education plan.
Okay.
And that was conducted, it was finalized in 2018 or 2019. And before I moved to Memphis. And so all of our early childhood education work is based off of it. My major, it's an amazing piece of work, and First 8 Memphis works off of it. But I always believe that we cannot do work as professionals, right, if we're not talking to the people that we care most about. And so as I was looking at the early childhood education plan, I kept asking, how many parents did we talk to? How many parents did we talk to? And we learned that those who worked on the plan talked to some parents, but not nearly enough. And so we felt like in order for us to do our job well, we have to talk to parents and providers much more. And also, I happen to have worked in the infant mental health space for now 17 years. So it's the foundation of child development. Mm-hmm. And Memphis hadn't, while there was so much infant mental health leadership here, the landscape assessment was to bring it all together and make sure we were all aligned.
Were there any pieces of information that came out of this assessment that surprised you or that affirmed some ideas that you thought might be true?
Mm-hmm. Nothing super, super surprising. I would say one thing that was surprising but kind of like pulled at my heartstrings was especially in the focus group we did with pregnant parents and parents with children under the age of 1 was how much they talked about how isolated they felt and how lonely they felt and how they'd felt like doctors and MDs and pediatricians weren't listening to them. And doulas said the same thing. We had a focus group with doulas, and doulas also felt like they're disregarded in the medical space, even though they play such an important role in helping someone pregnant go through the pregnancy and connect to the developing child. And that, I kind of knew that, and I've heard that in other places too, but to be in focus groups and hearing people tell the stories and get teary-eyed and feel so disrespected, that was, for me, I just, like, my heart was just, oh, it was just breaking over that. So some of the other things that we learned was, you know, parents just felt like they didn't have access to resources. There are lots of things that people don't know. And that another really big thing was, and this feels newer to me, was the number of parents who talked about their children being on the autism spectrum and how long and how hard it was for them to get their children diagnosed. But then once they got diagnosed, people celebrated. There's a statewide organization called Tennessee Early Intervention Services. Early intervention, as you can think about it, is about how do we support families early before a child generally turns three. And so parents were talking about how hard it was to get their children assessed for any sort of developmental delay, and how when they would go to the doctor would say, let's wait, the child is fine, let's wait. And they knew their intuition was something was not right, but they had to keep waiting. But then when they got early intervention services, they sang the praises of the statewide agency. So it was, you know, both and. It was really hard. People didn't feel like they were being listened to. And then when some people finally got services, they were feeling like the services were high quality and they got a lot of their needs met.
So interesting. Like it all finally like clicked into place.
Yeah, but.
But yeah, not at the right timing.
Not at the right time.
So kind of speaking of this, what are some of the action steps that you are hopeful to be taken from some of this data? And Kim, you can chime in too. Like you were part of the sense making, like making sense of what this data means for providers, for parents, for children. I'm just curious, like what types of things do you think that we as a community can expect to hopefully come from this data?
The first thing that I hope that comes from this data is people become more knowledgeable. They know that services are out there. It's realistic, realism. They realize that, it's happening. Our families need help and they need them as soon as they can get them. So when we start connecting and then introduce them, and then they can tell the next family, so that the impact that has, that's what, I see happening, and I think it's great. I deal with that every day.
Every
single day. And I know, TEIS is, Tennessee Early Intervention System Services. They're wonderful. But like Dr. Thomas said, it's very difficult, to get there. And once you get there, though, it's great.
What do you think is some of, maybe a roadblock to some of the access to some of these services? Do you think it is just purely educational that people just don't know they're out there? Or do you think it's also something else?
I think it's a combination that people don't know the services are out there. And some of it is, we have young parents that need to be educated, don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And, don't know the milestones. I'm not recognizing that my child should be doing this at a certain age. It's on both ends that it's really late that someone's recognizing that maybe this child is not developing.
I got you.
And that's a very hard conversation to have with a parent.
Oh, I would only imagine.
It's very difficult.
It's tricky. Like you said, both and, Candace, but then also, Kim, like, it's a hard conversation. Like, no one wants to, as a parent, it would be hard to hear that. But also as a parent, to your point, Candace, it would be hard for me to be, like, advocating and, like, be in a vacuum and, like, feel like I wasn't being heard when I was advocating. So I think that this data is really so impactful and going to impact the lives of so many individuals, families, children, who will become the leaders of tomorrow.
Yeah. And you may, Anna, you may even know this yourself, but another thing that we found was that people had to jump through so many hurdles or jump through hoops and hurdles and loops and all the things to get services. I couldn't think of the metaphor.
Yeah.
But people just, I mean, you have to be like, one of my old team members said, super advocate. Like, you have to work so hard to get your child, to get our children what they need. And that was also a huge takeaway as well.
And I'm a benefactor of TEIS.
Oh.
I had to use them.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be, as a parent, with the services not being readily available, and I didn't know, these are my first children. I had twins. You have to be aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to, you know, I say to some of the parents, don't take no.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, you're that child's
number one advocate.
Yeah. So you can't, don't take no.
You're a dog with a bone.
You just keep going and keep going. And that's what I did. And I know from personal experience, if you do it, it works. And it makes, and the outcome for the child is wonderful.
So tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, was one of the elements studied in the landscape assessment, ACEs? So for those who don't know, adverse childhood experiences, was that kind of taken into consideration in this survey, or is that something kind of you would look at totally separately?
That, I feel like that's something to look at separately.
Okay.
We did talk a little bit about, we did ask people, what's it like raising children in Memphis? What are the amazing parts about raising children in Memphis, and what are the really hard parts?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the really hard parts were related to adverse childhood experiences. The biggest thing that came up, which unfortunately won't be too surprising, is that people talked about crime.
Mm-hmm.
And not crime that you're just hearing about on the news, but people's own individual experiences and how that shaped like their relationship with their children. And what their children, how their children talk about hearing gunshots or having literally bullets fly through windows, or being armed at gunpoint with your children. So there were definitely, we talked about it, but we didn't directly, like, say, you know, what ACEs did you experience?
Right. it wasn't a question directly on the landscape study.
No.
Well, and you mentioned that there were some things noted that were exciting about raising a child in Memphis. Could you share some of those?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh, my goodness. People obviously just talked about being in a community with, being in a close-knit community, and a lot of folks being in a community where they have close family and friends. So we know how important it is our family and friends are. So that was huge, and being relatively close to family and friends. So not having to travel miles and miles, but to be in a same neighborhood. A lot of people talked about all the parks and Shelby Farms and getting outdoors with their children. They talked about the arts and music and Memphis culture. So lots of celebration around all of those things.
That matters a lot.
Yeah.
It's especially, like you said, both of y'all started during the pandemic. It was so lovely that we have such lovely outdoor spaces that we were able to inhabit and, you know, be able to go to so many parks and have green spaces and be able to do everything safely and kind of burn off some of that energy. Kim, I know you.
yes. Outdoors was my best friend.
Those pretty days.
We talk about some of those resources usually through the lens of adulthood, that we're trying to find moments of reprieve and stepping away from the office to, you know, look at the sky for a little bit. But what are some similar activities that kids need for, you know, their mental health? I mean, I'm sure there are some obvious ones there, but, you know, what should we be thinking about as resources that we as a community need to make sure that our youth have access to?
I was for the our youth to have access to, as you mentioned, the outdoor area, and giving them not just putting playground equipment in place, although it allows them to, you know, play and express themselves and get there, but give them basically the outdoors, you know, let them make up their own games, let them have fun. So it's nature. That's what I call it. Just give them nature and just see what they do with it.
That imagination, that creative play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. And I would say for babies, like and infants and toddlers, that their sense of well-being depends on the adults who care for them.
Ooh.
Right?
You're hitting me hard.
I know.
You're hitting
me hard. It's a lot.
That means I have to be zen to have a zen baby.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
Darn it.
Yes.
I'm just kidding.
I always say you can never spoil a baby. And I grew up in a family where they will always say, stop spoiling that baby. You're spoiling mm-hmm. that baby. But babies need to be held. They need to be like literally held all day long. And I know it can be hard, but that's why we have baby Bjorns
and yell the things.
Slings and many a things, because when they're really, really little, especially, they self-regulate and they regulate their emotions based off of the adults who are regulating their emotions. I know.
I agree.
Yeah. I know it is. It's so great.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I say that children should be spoiled when people said they should be spoiled. Number one, they grow up too fast.
I know.
And then they're little sponges. They're soaking in everything that you say or do. This is really when their brain is developing. Spoil them. You're teaching them love. You're teaching them to care. You're teaching them to be expressive. It's okay.
Exactly. Exactly. And mm-hmm. you're talking to them.
Yes.
And they're talking back to you in their own language, the language that we think we understand, babbling. Mm-hmm. Right? But so their mental health and their well-being is about whoever it is, whether it's a parent, if it's a childcare provider, like the amazing work that Kim does, whether it's a grandma, whoever is caring for them, giving them special attention, responding to their cries. When a 6-month-old starts to point at something, you're like, oh, yes, that is the light. You are pointing to the light. So showing them, oh, I'm going to talk to you when I get your attention. I care about what you're thinking about. I care about what you're pointing at. So exposure to nature, absolutely. And for a younger child, for an infant and a toddler, it's about how we are as adults, because how we are shapes how they are.
Wow. So I feel like that kind of answers a little bit my next question. It was, Kim, what has your experience as a provider in both has been like, with this data as the education piece, but also how that maybe might improve or adjust or shift how you implement some of the things that you're already implementing. Did the data impact any of that?
Absolutely. I was telling Dr. Candace, the infant mental health, you know, that's just something we don't normally think about.
Right.
Is mental health
right.
when it comes to infants. So it just kind of blew my mind, like, oh, all these years. I've never thought about, you know, I know about the brain development, but I didn't think about,
Right.
They're trying to tell me right. something. Something's going on in there. So it has had a positive impact on me. So it's been a learning experience. Everything I take is a teachable moment, not only just for myself, but for the children too, and staff and everything. So it's been positive because I've grown up some more. So not only that, you know, that's, and with the help from both agencies, mm-hmm. it just has expanded my knowledge. And some things I'm taking a different approach to when it comes to, you know, something as simple as crying mm-hmm. or something, or as simple when they take my hand, let's just walk and see where they're going. Mm-hmm. And I've been amazed that at my center that the infants are in the very back of the building. Mm-hmm. But when they start to walk, they know how to navigate the building. And I'm thinking, how do you know this? You've only been in this room, but you don't know what they're.
They picked it up every day when you brought them.
When you brought them up front.
Right.
And they're looking around and they're exploring. So it's been very positive for me and my staff, and as far as the families that, you know, I serve.
That's really exciting.
Little sponges.
So you mentioned, Candace, that a lot of the data that you found kind of affirmed a lot of things, and some of the things kind of pulled at your heartstrings. Was there anything that positively surprised you that you were like, oh, we're doing a lot better in this area than maybe people would think or would guess?
Oh, yeah. So a couple of things that positively surprised me. One was the early intervention system and how people felt like once they got assessed and they were receiving services, how happy they were with the service, how they felt heard by any, you know, you could see occupational therapists, physical therapists, et cetera. And people felt like, oh, this has helped my family. So that was huge. That was, we could celebrate that forever. Also, the professionals that we surveyed and did focus groups with, they knew a lot about the folks that we worked with. So we reached 200 people. So that's a lot, but it's not everyone, obviously. But the people that we reached knew a lot about infant mental health and child development. And so and knew a lot about the different ways in which they can promote healthy development for children. So that was a really, really big celebration point.
That's so encouraging.
Yeah.
I kind of have a question, probably selfishly. What happens after First Aid Memphis? What happens after the First Aid? Are there interventions, resources, things like that in place for as like a handoff service for after a child is eight and then they need other things? Are there other organizations that come to mind as being especially helpful?
Oh, that's a good question. Kim, what are you?
I'm thinking as far as it continues, they're in school. Mm-hmm. You know, the school will accept them as early as three once Tennessee Early Intervention gets with them. So then the school will provide occupational and the physical mm-hmm. and the speech therapy. And some of the schools actually have those services inside of the school. You know, as I told you, it's being having to use them. That's what my children, they want to. Matter of fact, I sought schools, though, that had those services in the schools.
Right.
So they are still there. Because I talked to some of the parents, when they leave, the services are being still provided. So once they get in the schools, Shelby County School takes over and continue the services. But still, it does take parental involvement.
Kim's incredible organization has, you know, been a part of this work. Can you share some of the other organizations that are a part of kind of the First Aid Network?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many. I don't want to leave anyone out, but so I'll just talk about the areas of work, if that's okay, because then I know if I had to go through a list, I would leave people out. So our work is prenatal to eight. So that involves anyone who is providing services while someone is pregnant. So pediatricians, as we said, doulas, midwives, psychologists, anyone who is supporting or therapists supporting a family when a family is pregnant. And then we also work across these four pillars of our system, of our early care and education system. That's home visiting. So home visiting is a service for families prenatally. Some go up to the age of five, where you literally have support of someone who knows about children, who may be a therapist or a social worker, who may come to your house and check in on you regularly and just be a support person for you. And that feels so important now because, like I said, when I heard from folks say that they felt so isolated, having a home visitor could be like a cousin or a family member who's coming to check in with you. So we work in home visitation, work in childcare, which is why we're connected to Kim and Brilliant Minds. And Next Memphis. And then we work in the pre-K space and then kindergarten to third grade space. So literally all of our partners or anyone who's involved in any of those age range, in that age range.
For anyone who is in need of First Aid services, supports, and resources, how can they get in touch with you?
Yes. So obviously you can look at our website. We are on all the social media platforms. Our website is a service as well. We also have a Pre-K Memphis website in particular. So if you're looking for, if you have a child or a baby that's 4 years old, you can refer to our Pre-K website. You can also, we're a systems organization, so we don't provide direct service. But if you want to advocate for your children and be involved from like a, I know this is important, we got to do better as a society, we have what's called a leadership council. And that is for anyone who cares about or is involved in the prenatal to eight space. And that's our main way so that we make sure that we're all aligned and we're advocating for children. Just last week, we took a busload of folks to Nashville. And so these were parents, these were pre-K operators, Memphis Shelby County Schools joined us, Porter Leith, child care centers like KIMS, and we all went to advocate for our state legislators on behalf of early childhood and early childhood education. So you can go to our website and get involved in many ways.
Both Kim and Candace, I want to give you each an opportunity to share on this. So we can start with you, Kim. Why is the first 8 years of children's life so beneficial for somebody, even if they aren't a parent? For somebody in Memphis who's like, I'm not a parent, I'm not a teacher, so none of this impacts me. Why would you say that that's incorrect?
That is definitely incorrect because this is our future. That's our future. So at some point, somehow, some way, this will impact you, be it your everyday lives.
This the is next mayor,
the next mayor, the next this may be your teacher, this may be your child's teacher, grocery store, gas station. It impacts our lives everywhere. You know, so just because you're not a mother, you still will have contact with those people. And it may be someone in your family that you can assist. You know, you may, unfortunately, have a child, you know, come to you through some negative things that have gone on in your family. And I've seen that happen, that mothers become mothers, not intentionally, but through family crisis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it impacts everybody.
It impacts everybody.
What about you, Candace?
I agree with everything Kim said. The only thing that I would add is that, you know, if you think about it from like a business lens, so what happens when we're young shapes what kind of adults we are, what kind of worker we are, what kind of employee we are, how we regulate our own emotions as an adult working together on teams. So, like, literally everything that happens when we're young impacts how we are as an adult. And so it's, if you're not a parent, you're a worker in some way. You have coworkers, you may lead a team, you lead projects. So if a child didn't learn how to self-regulate when they were young, it may be hard to work with them when they're older.
True. Yeah.
True.
You will reap what you sow.
Absolutely.
So sow some good seeds, Memphis.
Yeah.
So interesting. What is your hope for how the landscape study will be used? I know we hit on this earlier, but if you had to think like 1 year down the line, 5 years down the line, what is your hope for how our community could be different because of this?
Our community will be different. Simply, you know, this podcast, I hope a lot of people hear, you know, we can reach more families, because you'd be surprised at how many people don't know the services that are available. So hopefully through the social media, through agencies like mine or the partners, that we can get the word out and we can draw in more families and become a stronger community and, you know, an advocate for our children.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I hope that it spreads more knowledge about that young children do have mental health needs, and that their mental health needs are shaped by the relationships they have with whoever is caring for them, that it also reduces some stigma around mental health. Sometimes when we think about mental health, we think about the most awful things, or we think about different mental health diseases. And in this case, infant mental health can be more of a prevention. So if we start now, we may have less challenges down the road. I hope that we as a community can better support people's well-being and social-emotional well-being, and having the data will give us sort of a baseline, and then we get better and better every year. And, you know, one of the major things that came from the assessment that it won't be surprising is obviously when we don't have a lot of money or we may be poor, that shapes how we are with our kids. So there's also work to do, and there's a big initiative, you all may know about it, More from Memphis, to help us think about what are the economic opportunities in our city and county. Because, you know, how our economic opportunities shape how what we can provide for our children. And so I hope that through all of these collaborative efforts, we could really do a better job of addressing poverty in our community.
I think one thing that has kind of been bubbling to the front of my mind during this conversation is how collaborative so many organizations and individuals are in our city. We've spoken with the folks at Habitat for Humanity about social determinants of health and things like that. And as you mentioned, how poverty impacts everything. And Kim, similarly, if you're too worried about how you're going to get diapers on your kid, you know, maybe their mental health is maybe not the forefront of your mind because you have to worry about, you know, XYZ first. But you have people like Sweet Cheeks Diaper Ministry and all these other people who can step in to fill the gaps. So the education piece is so important to let people know that there are people to stand in and help fill these gaps so that then you can focus on things like attachment and creative play and all sorts of things like that.
And we know, so this is a little bit like funny or not funny, but a cliche, but love is free, right?
Absolutely.
Like we can, if we can just pause and love on our babies, which is what the Infant Mental Health Landscape Assessment, we've titled it Loving on Our Babies, right? And so if we could just pause, love on our babies, love on ourselves, love on each other. I know it sounds kind of cheesy, but it's so important and it means so much to all of us. It means so much to all of us now. So imagine what it means to us when we're really fragile and little.
Just multiplied.
I agree. I push that and my love on these kids because we don't know what their home life is like in most situations. So love on them. They can get love if they can't get anything else. I don't care if they don't like the peas we served today, but I bet you they will like that hug you gave them this morning and say hi, or how pretty that dress is you have on. So like she said, love is free and we have an abundance of it. And I push that.
So true.
Memphis is a vibrantly diverse community. We have so many different communities within our larger city. What are the barriers to having such a diverse community, as well as what are some of the beautiful outcomes because of that?
The barrier, the largest barrier for me is language, as you touched on. Like now I'm trying to help some of them to get into the school system. And I was told just yesterday, there's only two Spanish speaking people there. So can you imagine how long that line is? This morning I was talking to a lady that's Arabic. So here we are, we're going back and forth with the phones. And that's my biggest barrier. And then when you talk to them, they don't know services that are available. So I need more of me to get involved so that we can help it, because this is such an underserved community. They don't know what's out there. And some of them are afraid to ask what's out there. So, and you have to build trust, what I'm finding, and build relationships with them. And then you find out just what they need. Through Next Memphis, I give the families what they call a family outcome assessment. And it talks about without them, they fill out the form and what they need and what, you know, what services we can help with. That's a major tool that has helped me to go to them and say, oh, you need this help. And it, I know how to approach most situations. Or if I'm not, if I don't, I have Next Memphis, I have First Aid and say, hey, here's my problem. Here's what I'm dealing with. And usually they have a service that I can go and reach out to, have the resource.
It's got to be challenging to ask for help when you don't know what help could look like.
Right. Yeah. That was, as Kim is saying, that's a big thing that we learned from the landscape assessment was that it's such a rich and vibrant community and there's so much diversity in Memphis and people were feeling like, first of all, they don't know what, you know, help in different countries look different. So you come to this country and you come to this city and this county and you're not really sure what to ask for, but you know you have an issue or you may have a need. Or when you know what to ask for, there may only be a handful of folks who speak your language or who not only speak your language, but understand your culture. So just because you speak, you know, let's say Arabic, doesn't mean you that you understand the huge diversity of
the nuances of
and the
dialects,
nuance of the dialects or the nuances of the culture. And so that was a really, really big thing. And we also realized that not only are there services needed, but the providers who are in the community also feel really isolated and burned out. So if you only have five Arabic speakers who can provide services, 100 Arabic families seeking those services, you're spread thin. You're really exhausted. You need additional help and support. So that was a huge need that came out from our work. And already Kim already knows all of that.
Mm-hmm. I can speak to that because I have a high, really high Hispanic population. But now lately, I have someone from Cambodia. I have the Arabic. I have someone from Ethiopia. I have someone from Egypt. I have someone from Nigeria. And even if you say they're from Africa, the culture is different.
Africa's huge. It's a continent. Yeah. It's a continent. Like saying people are from
America. They don't
America.
Do the same thing. They don't understand what we're doing here. And I have to call to get some help to explain it. But, you know.
Am I right in hearing that there is a need for bilingual, trilingual, or multilingual advocates? If anyone is listening and has, you know, a volunteer and, you know, a heart for volunteering in this space.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please call Brilliant Minds Child Development Center. You are welcome.
That there is a huge need to be able to advocate on behalf of the young people in our community and make sure that they have access to the resources that are available and to make sure that the providers have a little more help. Some people roll up their sleeves.
Yeah, and yeah. Anna, to your point, I'd love to ask both of you, are there opportunities for people to support your work and your organizations through their time, talent, treasures, and ties?
My door is open. Yes, it is.
Kim's like, come on.
Come on.
Yep. You can write a check. You can send a carrier pigeon, absolutely. Smoke signal, yes, whatever it is.
Yeah. I would definitely Kim will take welcome it. Because I sleep well at night and I get great pleasure out of helping a family, no matter how big it is or how small. If I can ease some of their and make things a little comfortable for them, it makes me feel better. It makes me know that what I'm doing is the right thing.
Mm. Absolutely. Just like many nonprofits, First State Memphis has a board of directors. So if there are people out there who are interested in serving in that way, we are always looking for new board members. We also, as I said earlier, we have a leadership council, and that's an opportunity for people to come together to advocate and to learn about early childhood and early childhood systems work. We also need to fundraise, too. And so you can, of course, make a donation, whatever you can from our website. And a few times a year, we do sponsor events and we typically seek volunteers for that as well. And so will be volunteer opportunities on our website and folks can look there for any additional needs or resources.
Speaking of your website, is that a place where folks can see results from the landscape assessment? How can they access that? Is that available to the public?
It will be. It will be available to the public by the end of the month. The end of the May, April and May are big months in the early childhood space. So there's Black Maternal Health Week coming up.
Oh, yes.
There's World Infant, Child and Adolescent Mental Health Day. And then May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So by the end of this month, we are going to be releasing our landscape assessment. It's going to be on our website. It's going to be a long report, but we're going to have a 2-page summary, so it'll be easy to review. And then most importantly, we're going to go back to the families that we interviewed and surveyed and share with them the results. That's the most important thing. So if any of you are out there listening, we are going to be in touch and we want to host you and share the results of everything that you shared.
So exciting. Nice. I'm excited to see what comes of this. And I love being on the forefront of these kind of conversations. So we are with y'all and we are excited to see how this impacts the future of our city. So thank you for taking time out of your busy schedules to join us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much.
Independent Bank is celebrating 25 years of sharing your stories, building your dreams, and serving you heroically. Find out how iBank can help you achieve your financial dreams at i-bankonline.com. Member FDIC.